Syria was a beautiful land, the fairest province of the Byzantine Empire. Its temperate climate, conditioned by the Mediterranean, provided relief from the heat of the desert and the cold of northern climes. Antioch was the capital of the Asian region of the Byzantine Empire and second only to Constantinople in glory and political importance. The great cities of Syria, Aleppo, Emesa, Damascus, not only contained immense commercial wealth, but were also seats of culture and civilization. Its thriving ports on the Mediterranean, Latakia, Tripoli, Beirut, Tyre, Acre, Jaffa, saw ships of the entire known world and bustled with trade and commerce. Politically, the Syrian region consisted of two provinces, Syria proper, stretched from Antioch and Aleppo in the north to the top of the Dead Sea. West and south of the Dead Sea lay the province of Palestine, which included the holy places of three great faiths and cities, no less rich and sophisticated than any in the world. The Arabs of the time also spoke of the province of Jordan lying between Syria and Palestine, but this was more of a geographical expression than a term denoting a political and administrative unit. And all this was part of the Eastern Roman, or what's commonly called Byzantine Empire. To invade Syria was to invade Rome, and this was not an action to be undertaken lightheartedly. The army of the Eastern Rome was a powerful instrument for the waging of imperial wars, and after the Persian army, the most efficient and formidable military machine in the world. Its legions were well equipped and ably led and could still strike terror into the hearts of the peoples over whose lands they marched. Like any great imperial army, it was not one national unit, but a heterogeneous collection of contingents from many peoples inhabiting many lands. In its ranks served Romans, Slavs, Franks, Greeks, Georgians, Armenians, Arabs, and tribes from the far-flung regions. These soldiers manned garrisons in the cities of Syria, most of which were fortified. Syria was partly an Arab land, especially in its eastern and southern parts. The Arabs had been there since pre-Roman times, and when Emperor Constantine made Christianity the state religion of the empire in the early part of the 4th century AD, these Arabs also embraced Christianity. But the Arabs of Syria were people of no consequence until the migration of the powerful Ghassanite tribe from the Yemen to Syria, which occurred a few centuries before Islam. For some time, the Ghassanide fought the Roman garrisons in eastern Syria. Then, as the Romans came to realize and value their martial spirit and warlike traits, they made peace with them and agreed to their living in Syria as a semi-autonomous people with their own king. The Ghassanide dynasty became one of the honored princely dynasties of the empire, with the Ghassanide king ruling over the Arabs in Jordan and southern Syria from his capital at Busra. The launch of invading Syria. In February 634, Abu Bakr, the caliph, successor of Muhammad, issued a call to arms for the invasion of Syria. All was now quiet on the Iraq front. Khalid ibn al-Walid's campaign in Iraq had proved an unqualified success. The Muslims, therefore, came to feel that if they could win against the formidable and much feared Persians, why not also against the Romans, who were not as fearsome as an imperial military power? In recruiting for the Syrian campaign, Abu Bakr wrote to the people of Mecca, Al-Ta'if, Al-Yaman, and all the Arabians in Najd and Al-Hijaz, summoning them to a holy war and arousing their desire for it and for the war pillage to be got from the Greeks. Tribal contingents responded eagerly to the call. They came in thousands from all over the peninsula. They came mounted and armed for battle. Abu Bakr now organized the available manpower into four corps, each of about 7,000 men. The commanders of these corps and the objectives given to them were Amr ibn al-As, Yazid bin Abi Sufyan, Sharhabil bin Hasna, and Ubaidah bin al-Jarrah. The invasion of Syria had been launched. Yazid arrived at the valley of Araba and about the same time as Amr ibn al-As has reached Ayla. Both corps made contact with Roman forces of about equal strength, which had been sent forward from the main Roman army to prevent the Muslims from entering Palestine. Both Yazid and Amr ibn al-As has fought the Roman detachment facing them and drove them back with heavy losses. When the Romans, defeated by Yazid, withdrew in precipitous haste, Yazid sent a fast column which overtook the retreating detachment at Dazin, some distance short of Gaza, and caused considerable damage before joining Yazid at the valley of Araba. Meanwhile, Amr ibn al-As was moving north along this valley. This engagement took place within a fortnight of the start of the Muslim march from Medina. Early in May, Shurahbil and Abu Ubaidah had got to the region between Busra and Jabia. Yazid was camping somewhere in northern Jordan, and Amr waited by the valley of Araba. The emperor Heraclius was in Emesa planning countermeasures against the Muslims. When he first heard of the crushing defeat suffered by the Persian army at the hands of Khalid, he was not a little surprised, for he had had no higher opinion of the Arabs than did the Persian court once have. As a precaution, he ordered the positioning of several Roman legions at Ajnadin, whence they could operate against any Muslim force entering Palestine or Jordan. As the Muslim corps set off from Medina, the Roman army received intelligence of the move from Christian Arabs. Apprised of the latest situation and the direction of the Muslim movement, Heraclius realized that this was a serious attempt at the invasion of his domain. Soon after this, he heard of the defeat of the Roman covering forces sent from Ajnadin at the hands of the leading corps of the Muslim army. He decided to punish these rough intruders and throw them back into the desert whence they had come. On his orders, large detachment of the Roman army began preparations for a move to Ajnadin from garrisons in Palestine and Syria. By now, the Muslim commanders had established contacts with the local population and laid the foundations of an intelligent network. They had already come to know of the existence of a Roman army at Ajnadin. A few days later, they received intelligence of the movement of more Roman legions in the direction of Ajnadin, and all corps commanders sent messages to Abu Ubaidah informing him of these moves. Three corps of the Muslim army were in more or less the same region, eastern Jordan and southern Syria. Abu Ubaidah at once took these corps under his command. Amr ibn al-As was more isolated from the others and felt that the Roman preparations were being made against his corps. He therefore sought help from Abu Ubaidah. Sometime in the third week of May, the Caliph received a message from Abu Ubaidah giving a fairly clear picture of the situation in Syria and Palestine. Muslim estimates suggested that presently the Romans would have an army of 100,000 men at Ajnadin, from where it could either strike frontally against Amr ibn al-As or maneuver against the flanks and rear of the other three Muslim corps. The situation had taken a turn for the worse for Muslims. The Romans were in much larger strength than had been anticipated by the Muslims when the invasion was launched. And it was clear that the Romans were not going to sit in their fortified cities and await attack. They were concentrating into one great army to fight a grand offensive battle in the field. The Muslims would either have to fight a general set piece battle with the Imperial Roman army or withdraw hastily into Arabia, neither of which alternatives was pleasant to contemplate. The invasion of Syria had been launched, it must be sustained. But what caused Abu Bakr the greatest anxiety was the question of who should command the Muslim army. Abu Ubaidah was a wise, intelligent man and a widely esteemed and venerated Muslim. He was also a man of unquestionable personal courage, but knowing his mild and gentle nature and his lack of experience in the command of military forces in major operations, Abu Bakr had serious misgivings about his ability to lead the entire Muslim army in a serious clash with the powerful and sophisticated army of Eastern Rome. Here is when the caliph thought of Khalid ibn al-Walid, the commander who won the battles against the Persians, and sent him a letter informing him of his new mission. After conquering Iraq and while he was in Hira, Khalid received the letter from Caliph Abu Bakr appointing him the commander-in-chief of the Muslim army in Syria. Khalid was asked to leave half of his army in Iraq, where he will come back and resume command after conquering Syria. The detailed location of the Muslim forces in Syria were not known to him. He knew, however, that they were in the general area of Busra and Jabia, and he had to get there fast. An immediate decision of which route to take had to be made. There were two known routes available to Khalid for his march. The first was the southern route via Dawmat al-Jandal, whence the army could move along the normal caravan track into Syria. This was the easiest and simplest approach, with ample water on the way and no enemy to interfere with his movements. But it was also the longest route, and the movement would take considerable time to complete. The caliph had emphasized speed, as the situation of the Muslims was apparently serious. So after due consideration, Khalid rejected this route. The other route was the northern one along the Euphrates to northeastern Syria. This too was a well-traveled route, but it would take Khalid away from the Muslim armies and Roman garrisons on the Euphrates. He could overcome this opposition, but again, there would be delay. He had to find another way of getting to the Muslim forces in Syria. Khalid called a council of war and explained the situation to his officers. None responded except one noted warrior by the name of Rafi' bin Umayra. Rafi' explained that there was indeed a route through the land of Samawa. The army could proceed from Hira to Kurakir, and this would be an easy march. Kurakir was a well-watered oasis in the west of Iraq. Thence to Suwa, there was a little-known route which led through a barren, waterless desert. At Suwa again, there was ample water, and one day's journey before Suwa, there was a spring which he knew would provide sufficient water for the army. The most dangerous part of the journey was from Kurakir to this spring, about 120 miles. Rafi cautioned that even a lone traveler couldn't take this route. How about an army? Taking this route involves, on one hand, 5 days of extreme hardships without a single drop of water, and on the other hand, the danger of losing the way. The officers agreed with him, but Khalid was in favor of this hard but fast route. He motivated his officers and army by an inspirational speech about the aid of Allah. And with cheerful enthusiasm, the 9,000-man army of Khalid set about its preparations for the march to Syria on a route that no army had traveled before. For the night, the army camped at Kurakir and filled its water skins and other containers with supplies of water that were expected to last the men and animals 5 days. The first 3 days passed uneventfully. The men were oppressed by the intense heat and glare, but they were inured to hardship, and as long as there was water, all was well. But the water, which was meant to last 5 days, finished at the end of the third day. They had another 2 days' journey ahead of them with not a drop of water. For 2 days, the men struggled in the desert, tortured by heat of June. When the last day's march was completed, the men still lived, though most of them had reached the limits of human endurance. Rafi difficultly found the spring that quenched the men's thirst. After drinking and watering the animals, they continued their journey. The dangerous march was over. Khalid reached the Syrian border, leaving behind the Roman frontier and its garrisons facing Iraq. They were now only a day's march from Suwa, where the desert ended and habitation began. The column reached Suwa. This was the first settlement near the border of Syria. Next day, the army arrived at Arak, which was a fortified town defended by a garrison of Christian Arabs under the command of a Roman officer. As the garrison had retired to the safety of the fort on sighting them, the Muslims laid siege to Arak. It was here that Khalid first came to know that his name had spread beyond the lands in which he had fought. His reputation proved sufficient to bring about a peaceful surrender. The Roman garrison commander made an offer to surrender the fort. The people of Arak would only pay the jizya. They would only pay the jizya and suffer from nothing else. The next morning, Khalid dispatched two columns to subdue Sukhna and Qadma. At the same time, he sent a camel rider to find Abu Ubaidah in the area of Jabya and tell him of Jabya and tell him to remain at his position until the arrival of Khalid or the receipt of further instructions. Then, with the main body of his army, Khalid marched to Tadmur, Palmyra. At Sukhna and Qadma, the people were ready to follow Arak's people's footsteps and pay the jizya. There was no trouble at these places, and the columns returned to the army without any bloodshed. At Tadmur, the garrison locked itself in the fort, but hardly had the Muslims arrived and surrounded the fort when parleys were started for a peaceful surrender. Soon after, a surrender was negotiated in which the inhabitants of Tadmur agreed to pay the jizya and feed and shelter any Muslim warrior passing by their town. The Arab chief of Tadmur also presented Khalid with a prize horse, which he used in several battles of his campaign. From Tadmur, the army marched to Qaryatayn, the inhabitants of which resisted the Muslims. They were fought, defeated, and plundered. Qaryatayn suffered also in the last year from an attack of ISIS and was destroyed. The next stop was Huwarin, about 10 miles beyond Qaryatayn, which contained large herds of cattle. As the Muslims started gathering in the cattle, they were attacked by thousands of Arabs. These were the local inhabitants, reinforced by a contingent of the Ghassanid from Busra, which had hastened to help their comrades in Huwarin. They too were defeated and plundered. The following morning, the advance was resumed in the direction of Damascus. And after 3 days of marching, the army arrived at a pass about 20 miles from Damascus. From the Pass of the Eagle, Khalid moved to Marj Rahit, near a large Ghassanite town near the present Adra, on the road to Damascus. His first encounter, a successful one, was with Christian Ghassanite forces on Easter. At Marj Rahit, he attacked when he knew that they would be celebrating Easter. So he chose this day and he entered the city and made a great massacre. At Marj Rahit had gathered a large number of refugees from the region over which Khalid had recently operated, and these refugees mingled with the crowd celebrating the great feast. The Ghassanites were not unmindful of the danger which Khalid's entry into Syria posed for them. They had positioned a strong screen of warriors on the route from Tadmur below the pass, but this screen was scattered in a few minutes by a swift charge of the Muslim cavalry. Although some Ghassanites' resistance continued as the Muslims advanced, it ceased once the town was reached. The Muslims raided Marj Rahit. After a little while, having collected a large amount of war pillage and a certain number of captives, Khalid pulled out of the town and camped outside. The following morning, he sent a strong mounted column toward Damascus with the task of raiding the Ghouta. Then, having sent a messenger to Abu Ubaidah with instructions to report to him at Busra, Khalid himself set off for Busra with the main body of the army by passing Damascus. The mounted column sent to Damascus reached the neighborhood of the city, picked up more war pillage and captives, and rejoined Khalid while he was still on the march. The minor operations following Khalid's entry into Syria were now over. Abu Ubaidah had already occupied the district of Hauran, which lay northeast of the river Yarmouk. Under his command, he had three corps of the Muslim army, his own, Yazids and Shurhabils, but he had fought no battles and captured no towns. He was worried about Busra, a large town which was the capital of the Ghassanites' kingdom. It was garrisoned by a strong force of Roman and Christian Arabs under the command of Roman officers. While Khalid was clearing the region of eastern Syria, Abu Ubaidah sent Shurhabil with 4,000 men to capture Busra. Shurhabil marched to Busra, the garrison of which withdrew into the fortified town as soon as the Muslims appeared in sight. This garrison consisted of 12,000 soldiers, but expecting that more Muslim forces would soon arrive and that Shurhabil's detachment was only an advance guard, it remained within the walls of the fort. Shurhabil camped on the western side of the town and positioned groups of his men all around the fort. For 2 days, nothing happened. The following day, as Khalid set out on the last day of his march to Busra, the garrison of the town came out to give battle to the Muslims outside the city. Both forces formed up for battle, but first there were talks between Shurhabil and the Roman commander, at which the Muslim offered the usual alternatives: Islam, the jizya, or the sword. The Roman chose the sword, and in the middle of the morning, the battle began. For the first 2 hours or so, the fighting continued at a steady pace, with neither side making any headway. But soon after midday, the superior strength of the Romans began to tell, and the battle turned in their favor. The Romans were able to move forces around both Muslim flanks, and the fighting increased in intensity. The temper of the Muslims became suicidal as the real danger of their position became evident, and they fought ferociously to avoid encirclement, which appeared to be the Roman design. By early afternoon, the Roman wings had moved further forward, and the encirclement of Shurhabil's force became a virtual certainty. Then suddenly the combatants became aware of a powerful force of cavalry galloping en masse towards the battlefield from the northwest. When Khalid heard the sounds of battle, he immediately ordered the men to horse, and as soon as the cavalry was ready, led it a gallop towards the battlefield. But Khalid and the Romans never met. As soon as the Romans discovered the arrival of the Muslim cavalry, they broke contact with Shurhabil and withdrew hastily into the fort. Next morning, the Roman garrison again came out of the fort to give battle. The shock of Khalid's arrival the previous day had now worn off, and seeing that the combined strength of the Muslims was about the same as their own, the Romans decided to try their luck again. They also hoped to fight and defeat the Muslims before they could get a rest after their march. The two armies formed up for battle on the plain outside the town. Khalid kept his center under his own command, appointing Rafi' as the commander of the right wing, and Dhirar bin al-Azwar as the commander of the left wing. In front of the center, he placed a thin screen under Abdurrahman bin Abi Bakr. At the very start of the battle, Abdurrahman duelled with the Roman army commander and defeated him. As a Roman general fled to the safety of the Roman ranks, Khalid launched a general attack along the entire front. For some time, the Romans resisted bravely while the commanders of the Muslim wings played havoc with the opposing wings, especially Dhirar, who launched his assault against the Romans and slaughtered all who faced him in single combat. After some fighting, the Roman army broke contact and withdrew into the fort. After that, Khalid gave the orders for the commencement of the siege. The Muslims now led siege to Busra. The Roman commander lost hope, for he knew that most of the available reserves had either moved or were moving to Ajnadin, and doubted that any help would be forthcoming. After a few days of inactivity, he surrendered the fort peacefully. The only condition Khalid imposed on Busra was the payment of jizya. This surrender took place in about the middle of July 634. Busra was the first important town to be captured by the Muslims in Syria. The Muslims lost 130 men in the 2 days of fighting that preceded this victory. The casualties suffered by the Romans and the Christian Arabs are not on record. Khalid now wrote to Abu Bakr, informing him of the progress of his operations since his entry into Syria, and sent one-fifth of the spoils which had been won during the past few weeks. Hardly had Busra surrendered when an agent sent by Shurhabil to the region of Al-Naidin returned to inform the Muslims that the concentration of Roman legions was proceeding apace. Soon, they would have a vast army of 9,000 imperial soldiers in Ajnadin. At this time, Yazid was still south of the river Yarmouk, Amr ibn al-As was still at the valley of Araba, and several detachments of the corps of Abu Ubaidah and Shurhabil were spread over the district of Huran. Khalid wrote to all commanders to march at once and concentrate at Ajnadin. And the Muslims marched, taking with them their wives and children and vast herds of sheep, which served as a moving supply depot. At Ajnadin would be fought the first of the mighty battles between Islam and Christendom. The Battle of Ajnadin. In the third week of July 634, the Muslim army marched from Busra. They were about 32,000 men, the largest Muslim force yet assembled for battle. The Romans had concentrated an army of 90,000 men, as mentioned before. This Roman threat, cleverly engineered by Heraclius, had to be eliminated before the invasion could proceed deeper into Syria. So it came about that the Romans and the Muslims faced each other in their respective camps at Ajnadin. Early in the morning of July 30, 634, Khalid ordered to move to battle positions. Khalid deployed his army facing west on a front of about 5 miles, stretched sufficiently to prevent the more numerous Roman army from overlapping his flanks. When the Romans saw the Muslims moving, they also rushed out and began to form up in their battle positions about half a mile from the Muslim front line. Warden, the Roman commander-in-chief, sent a bishop to offer Muslims money and rewards if they take their army away from this land. In reply, Khalid offered the usual three alternatives: Islam, the jizya, and the sword. As for the money and rewards, Khalid pointed out that the Muslims would soon possess them anyway, by right of conquest. After Khalid's reply, Warden ordered a line of archers and slingers to be positioned ahead of the Roman front within range of the Muslim army. With their action, the battle began. This phase of the battle went against the Muslims, several of whom were killed while many were wounded. Khalid decided to let individual champions go into combat against Roman champions. in this dueling, the Muslims would have the advantage, and it would be useful to eliminate as many of the Roman officers as possible, as this would in turn reduce the effectiveness of the Roman army. This phase more than restored the balance in favor of the Muslims, for most of the Roman champions were killed in combat. While this dueling was still in progress, Khalid ordered a general attack, and the entire Muslim front moved forward and hurled itself at the Roman army. The main battle was now on with sword and shield. The losses of the Romans were staggering. Worden was shocked to learn that thousands of his soldiers lay dead on the battlefield, while very few Muslims had been accounted for. David, Worden's messenger to Khalid, betrayed his master and revealed to Khalid Worden's conspiracy against him, which consisted of a peace offering while willing to kill him. Worden ended up being killed. Virar, a warrior under the command of Khalid, cut his head. After that, another phase of violent hand-to-hand fighting began. Soon, the fighting became vicious, with no quarter given or taken. The Muslims struck fiercely at the Roman formations, and the Romans struggled desperately to hold the assault. The battlefield soon turned into a wreckage of human bodies, mostly Roman, as the men struggled mightily without respite. With the death of Kubuklar, a Roman commander, the Roman resistance weakened and soon after collapsed entirely. The Roman army had been torn to pieces. The Romans had been fought in a set piece battle after the regular imperial fashion, and were not only defeated tactically but also slaughtered mercilessly. Victory in the Battle of Nazdain opened the way for the conquest of Syria. This land could not be conquered with a single battle, for large imperial forces remained in the cities of Syria. Khalid informed the caliph that he would shortly march on Damascus. Abu Bakr wrote to him to besiege Damascus until it was conquered, and thereafter attack Emesa and Antioch. Heraclius, after hearing the tragedy of the defeat of the Roman army, journeyed from Emesa to Antioch, expecting the Muslims to advance on Damascus. He ordered remnants of the Roman army at Jerusalem to intercept the Muslims at Yakuza, Yarmouk River bank, and delay their advance. At the same time, he ordered more forces into motion towards Damascus to strengthen that city and prepare for a siege. A week after the Battle of Ajnadain, Khalid marched with the Muslim army and passed Jerusalem from the south, moved toward Damascus. The conquest of Syria. At the time of the Syrian campaign, the Roman commander-in-chief at Damascus was Thomas, son-in-law of Emperor Heraclius. Damascus had not been prepared for a siege. The garrison of Damascus was under the command of General Azazir, a veteran soldier who had spent a lifetime campaigning in the east and had acquired fame in countless battles against the Persians and the Turks. Heraclius sent a force of 5,000 soldiers from Antioch to reinforce the garrison of Damascus, which was placed under the command of General Koulos. Koulos and Azazir were professional rivals. Each wished to see the downfall of the other. Khalid had by now organized a military staff. He had collected from all the regions in which he had fought, Arabia, Iraq, Syria, and Palestine, a small group of keen and intelligent men who acted as his staff officers, mainly functioning as an intelligence staff. He also organized a force of 4,000 horsemen, the Mobile Guard, who were kept under his personal command. Let's go to slide number 60, or, yeah. 60. So they sieged Damascus. At each of the remaining gates, he deployed a force of 4,000 to 5,000 men, whose commanders were also as follows: Gate of Thomas, Babtuma, Shurhabil, Jabia Gate, Abu Ubaida, Gate of Paradise, Faradis, Amr ibn al-As, Kaysan Gate, Yazid, and Small Gate, Yazid. On the day following the arrival of the Muslims, Khalid had Kulus and Azazir brought in irons near the east gate where they could be seen by the Romans on the wall. Here, both generals were offered Islam and both rejected the offer. Then, in full view of the Roman garrison, the two generals were beheaded. Soon after Heraclius heard of the defeat of the Roman army at Marjus Sufar by Khalid and the commencement of the siege of the city, he undertook measures to raise fresh forces. Within 10 days of the start of the siege, Heraclius had raised a new army of 12,000 men drawn from garrisons in various parts of the northern Syria and the Jazir. The relief column marched via Emesa, made contact with Muslim scouts between Emesa and Damascus, and from here onwards was prepared for battle at a moment's notice. On September 9, 634, and after knowing the approach of a Roman army, Khalid immediately organized a mounted force of 5,000 men and placed it under Dhirar and Rafi. Dhirar was taken by the Romans as prisoner. Therefore, Rafi asked for reinforcement, and the next morning, Khalid appeared with his 4,000 mobile guard after ordering some adjustment on the gates of Damascus. Soon after, Dhirar were rescued from the Romans. The Muslim attack continued in force, and at about midday, the Romans began to withdraw from the battlefield in good order. Khalid had rejoined the Muslim army at Damascus. He resumed command and reestablished the Muslim dispositions as they had been before the appearance of the Roman relief column. Thomas decided to attempt a powerful sally from the fort. Early in the third week of September 634, Thomas drew men from all sectors of the city and formed a strong force to break out through the gate of Thomas. His immediate opponent here was Shurhabil with his corps of about 5,000 men. Very soon, there was heavy fighting between the two bodies of men. Shurhabil's corps was outnumbered but held its ground, not yielding an inch, and Roman losses began to mount. Thomas got injured and the Roman returned to the fort, leaving behind a large number of dead. Thomas ordered another sally that night, not only at the Thomas Gate main point, but also at the Jabia, the small, and the east gates, in order to keep the Muslim corps tied down, so that they would not be able to come to the aid of Shurhabil in the moonlight. In the moonlight, the Roman attacks began as planned. At the Jabia gate, there was some hard fighting, and Abu Ubaida himself entered the fray with drawn sword. Several Romans fell under his blows before the sally was repulsed, and the Romans hastened back to the city. At the small gate, Yazid had fewer troops than were positioned at the other gates. Dhirar was nearby and joined Yazid with his 2,000 warriors. Dhirar hurled his men at the enemy, whereupon the Romans reached as if they had been assailed by demons and hastily withdrew to the fort with Dhirar close upon their heels. At the east gate, fearing that Rafi might not be able to hold the attack, Khalid went into battle himself with his reserve of 400 veterans from the mobile guard. Soon, the Romans were in full retreat with the Muslims cutting down the stragglers. The heaviest fighting, however, took place at the gate of Thomas. But seeing that there was no weakening in the Muslim front, Thomas decided that to continue the attack would be fruitless and would lead to even heavier casualties among his men. He ordered a withdrawal, and the Romans moved back at a steady pace. This was the last attempt by Thomas to break the siege. The attempt had failed. He had lost thousands of men in these sallies and could no longer afford to fight outside the walls of the city. On September 18, 634, a Greek young man betrayed his people and gave Khalid the key to entering Damascus after accepting Islam. He informed Khalid that in the city this night, the people were celebrating a festival, in consequence of which there was revelry and drunkenness everywhere, and few sentries would be found at the gates. If Khalid could scale the wall, he would have no difficulty in opening any gate he chose and forcing an entry into the city. Khalid took two leaders with him and, following the Greeks' advice, scaled the wall of Damascus at the east gate. They opened the gate after killing the guards, and the army came pouring into the city. Khalid began his last onslaught to get to the center of Damascus, killing all who stood in his way, the regiment defending the sector of the east gate. Thomas, cleverly knowing that he does not have the capability to fight, turned to Abu Ubaidah on the Jabia gate and offered him peace, which he accepted. Damascus would be entered peacefully. There would be no bloodshed, no plunder, no enslavement, and no destruction of temples. The inhabitants would pay the jizya, the garrison, and any local inhabitants who wished to do so would be free to depart from the city with all their goods. Both parties, Khalid and Abu Ubaidah, arrived at the center of the city simultaneously. Khalid was the commander and had to be obeyed. His towering personality and his unquestioned judgment in military matters made him difficult to argue with, especially on this occasion, when he was determined to regard the conquest of Damascus as a consequence of the use of force and not of peaceful negotiation. The two commanders finally arrived to an agreement, and Khalid accepted the terms of peace. The guarantee of safety was for 3 days only. After 3 days, Khalid followed the Romans, caught up the convoy near Antioch, and killed Thomas and lots of Romans. Very few were able to escape to safety. Thank you.